Welcome to the Mudstack Podcast, all the fits that make news.
The whole world gone crazy!
What's up, my friend? How you doing?
Great to be here with you, sir.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. You know, we get to a point in precast. We get to a point in precast sometimes where it gets quiet. All right, now it's time to record. There's nothing else to be said.
James.
Well, as always, we're happy to have you back and listening. For our new listeners, welcome. To our veteran, tenured listeners, welcome. For everyone who's tuning in internationally and domestically, the world is going crazy and we're here to elucidate the best we can. Kind of excited on this 237th episode to bring to you a bit of a new format that we're working on, and that is the educational segment, the bizarre segment, and then the meat of the podcast. So we're going to bring you some tidbits for those avid newsworthy folks out there. You probably know everything we're about to talk about because our listeners are incredibly educated. Apparently, more than me, you know, do fake my way through here. But, you know, as always, thank you for tuning in. Head over to modstate.com for more opinion pieces. And of course, please listen to our podcast anywhere that you listen to your podcast. However, you can find us at Spotify, Stitcher, and then, of course, iTunes and Podomatic, our hosting site.
iHeartRadio, Pandora, and I take it as a compliment that Amazon emailed us about adding ourselves to their podcast roster. I think that's a good sign.
I would say anywhere that you can stream podcasts, you'll find us.
You're like, you know what? Let me tell you something, Jeff.
let me tell you something, Jeff. You and your $1 trillion company. Well,
it sounded good at the time.
Yeah, it's true. Well, so what do we want to do first? Do we want to do educational? Should we like ramp our way up with like kind of more boring to more exciting?
Let's do the educational because it is extraordinary.
Okay, so we're saying
impossible. What Mr. Wellon's about to tell you was for the longest thought. I mean, it's like suggesting life on the moon.
Oh, so we're
how extraordinary it is.
Okay, so we're going with
educational.
Well,
I mean, we do a lot of that.
Yeah. So I mean, you're getting your economics degree. So maybe you'll be able to elucidate a bit more on this than I will. However, even with my lowly finance concentration in as a business grad,
you said that, not me.
The Federal Reserve has come out and said that they are going to extend interest rates at almost near zero until 2023. So, folks, we've got cheap cash for the next 3 years. Talking cheap money. So what does that mean? What does that mean? Well, it means that I should refi my mortgage, that's for sure. But I probably could just hang out and wait for a little bit. But I think you brought it up more eloquently in precast, and that is this might have to do with the fact that, I don't know, we just borrowed what? $1 trillion? For COVID, and we probably need to borrow another trillion at least. And it's important at this time to keep those interest rates low. But I think broadly across the economy, I think it's you know, ever since the recession in 2008, 2009, there's been a lot of things that the Fed has done that has worked. And I think they're really not trying to fix something. You know, that's not broken at this point. Obviously, there's some concern of negative interest rates, I don't know how plausible that will be over the next 3 years. The concern with keeping the interest rates low, obviously, and keep me humble here, is that there really is no real room for the Fed to operate in a crisis.
Precisely.
And what they mean by room is really like the levers to actually, you know, if we need to, if the Fed feels that the policy is to lower interest rates to help cool the economy, or, well, in the case, lowering interest rates doesn't necessarily do that, but whatever the reason is to lower those interest rates, when you're at zero, you literally can't go any lower. And negative interest rates really just have a lot of horrific implications. So,
that's an honest order.
Exactly. So there's a concern that over the next 3 years, that there really is a lack of tools that the Fed will have given the need to lower interest rates. However, interest rates have been low for a really long time.
Since 2010.
Yeah. And there really hasn't been, and I think you'll find that if we're able to weather the economic storm that is COVID with these low interest rates, I think there'll be, I don't know, I'm not an economist, but I certainly think that there's a potential to look at the last decade, the last 12, 13 years, and really think again about what it means to have sustained low interest rates, the way that the Fed actually goes about managing crisis. And I don't mean necessarily our Fed, but certainly the Fed, the central banks throughout the world. So,
well, they all look to the Fed.
Exactly. So, and no, it has broad international implications. So,
I mean, that's just a reality. It's funny. When I thought we were launching into the educational segment, I thought Venus.
Oh, no.
And you went Federal Reserve. So, all right. Well, you know, I mean,
it's
maybe the same thing.
They're both equally educational and equally bizarre. I just and went with what I thought.
Equally, perhaps, just out there for the everyday citizen. Here's where this matters, okay? Obviously, it helps with the prime mortgage rate to stay near zero. But as far as the everyday household level, when the Federal Reserve announces that for the next, through 2022, 2023, that interest rates are going to be kept near zero, what that means is it pertains to the national debt. And we're getting down into the weeds here, but I'm going to do my best to stay above that. But what they're saying is, because we are borrowing an exponential sum every year, a significant amount of money to keep the federal government operating. You know, this whole debt ceiling thing, that's a joke. For the folks out there, when they argue about will they raise the debt ceiling or not? No, by federal law, they have to. They will raise the debt ceiling. So see through that, okay? So what this comes down to is the Federal Reserve, who is by far the largest lender to the United States government, they're saying we're going to keep rates near zero, so y'all don't have less and more dollars to pay back. Okay. Ignore the rumors. The 2012 Obama-Romney debate was a joke, where they were talking about, we're borrowing all this money from China. No, we're not. The Bank of England has loaned our government more money than China. The issue is our own central bank. Now, thank God, or whoever you want to thank, is in charge. And saying, no, we're going to finance this, the stimulus, round two that everybody wants, that's up to the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, there's been a debate out there recently about, like, what does the federal debt even mean? Does it actually mean anything?
It does.
And that's the thing, that's what the one camp thinks. I mean, that it absolutely does, that there absolutely is a default risk. And the other side that says, I don't know, maybe it actually doesn't really matter.
There's two sides to that. A, and I think I've said this before, but A, it is, in and of itself, a sign of the majesty of this country, in the sense that, okay, surpassing 25, 26 trillion, I think the debt is at 26.78 trillion as of yesterday. My God, how great in terms of notoriety and reach is this country? That's one way of looking at it. The other is, okay, this debt is based upon two premises. A, that the dollar will forever remain the world's reserve currency. And again, that's in the weeds and people are going, yeah, I'm going to turn this off now. The other is, the more significant one, is that U.S. Treasury bonds will forever remain the long-term investment, stable investment, and that's the People's Republic of China, Russia, you and I, anybody can buy them, and it's seen as the most stable investment you can make over the long term. But I will tell you this, it does not matter what spin anybody wants to put on it. Normally it's, what, 25, 10, 25, and 40-year bonds. When we're talking about issuing 75 and 100-year bonds for the debt, I don't care what label, what spin you want to put on it, there are recognizable cognizant problems, period.
Sure.
100-year bonds?
It's generational wealth development right there, huh?
I don't even know if your kids will be alive to see that.
I know, with this climate.
100 years?
100 years, you never know. Okay.
And I love the Fed.
No, I feel you. So that wraps that up. Interest rates at near zero until 2023. What does that mean? Well, you already heard it, so go back and listen. All right, so let's move on to the bizarre. Alien life on Venus. Who would have thought? Maybe we were just going the opposite direction out towards Mars when all we had to do is just go closer to the sun to find more alien life. So
the brightest object next to the moon, the stars. And see, this is how I thought we were beginning.
No, you have to listen. We've been doing 200 plus episodes of this. We got to ramp up. You can't hit them with life on Venus and then segue to interest rates at zero. It just doesn't work.
That's a good thought. You can't go from Alan Greenspan to Total Recall.
You have to play to the, give them a teaser. Shake it off, and maybe it gives the people on YouTube a chance to spend 2 minutes and then just click off because all they hear is interest rates and they're out. But if they just stuck in there, they would have heard about life on Venus.
Interest rates in Venus.
All right. So alien life on Venus. So phosphine gas is discovered, and this is a potential game changer. So, I'm not going to lie. I thought most of the headlines to this were a bit misleading. And it turns out that the life itself is not traditionally where it'd be thought to be, like on the surface. But this is actually found more in the atmosphere. So I'll just read a bit here, and I'll obviously link the show notes to this because this is on think.com from a senior astronomer, Seth Shostak. So he says, researchers at Cardiff University in Wales and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or MIT, together with colleagues from Asia and other British universities, just published a paper in The Nature of Astronomy, to which they claim to have found a smelly toxic gas, phosphine, high in the thick clouds of the Venus atmosphere. And so where this is interesting is that phosphine is actually produced by certain types of bacteria on Earth, which makes the link. Listen, if it's produced by life, then it's the same thing holds true by the laws of physics on Venus. So they say this: the presence of the airborne phosphine is a little like finding scat or shit stumbled upon in the desert. So, so the discovery was unexpected and a potential game changer. And if indeed living organisms are floating in the dense air of Venus, it would be enormously strengthen the argument that life isn't just a cosmic air, miracle. So, interesting. Now, I think the trick would be actually getting to Venus and getting in the atmosphere in that destructively hot area to be able to find this life.
So, is this bigger than the WOW signal?
Maybe. It's a good question.
No, I mean that sincerely. I mean, because, I mean, me personally, no. There's no way that there's not life out there. Period.
See, that's interesting coming from a... You said there's no way that there's not life out there.
Let me rephrase. There is life out there.
Okay. Now, that's interesting coming from a religious man as yourself. It's
How does that dispute my faith in God?
And I'm not saying it disputes your faith. I just think it is. I would be curious to see.
God is sovereign on all those worlds.
No, I realize that. And isn't it the Hebrew Bible that starts with in a beginning? I think it's something along those lines. There is in thee, and then there's in a beginning. So. No, I guess I'd take that back. It's not that it's surprising. I think it's refreshing, maybe, to hear that. I mean, whether or not the mental gymnastics that a god just made other life, or there's more of a scientific underlying reason for that life, or maybe
I don't think they would be gooey non-humanoids, little green men. I honestly, it could be the exact same humanoids everywhere else. I don't find that to be something that's causes my faith to be terminal any more than I would if I found out tomorrow that actually, you know what? Each day of the creation story was a million years. The Earth is 400 billion years old or whatever. Okay.
Cool. So it would not... It would not shatter your faith if all of a sudden we scooped up air particles from the atmosphere of Venus and there was life.
No.
Doesn't rewrite anything. Just news, good news, move on. I don't know.
I mean, I'm asking because, I mean, look, it's like when when I was in the Navy, when I was stationed with the Marines in 29 Palms, he thought he had this great gotcha moment for me. Because he had me watch the highly adulterated film Zeitgeist. And at the beginning, or might have been the end of it, but regardless, was this big gotcha moment for Christians in his mind, that the Epic of Gilgamesh, as if I'd never read it, had a flood story and all this. I'm going, okay. I said, Mike, the fact that there were multiple creation stories that included floods, the destruction of man, the wickedness of man. Okay? So that parchment is older than the one, actually the book of Job is the oldest one in the Bible, but the song remains the same. So what?
All right. It sounds fine with me.
Should I say something different?
Obviously, the discovery of potential life on Venus didn't need to break it down to religious, but I'm happy with it. It's something we can let's revisit when we actually discover life on Venus. But it's a good hypothetical.
Hey, I'll be the first one to say, let's go to Canal Street. Let's do it.
All right. I mean, you don't have to tease me with a good time.
I mean, look, man, you know what we did when you came down to visit Metairie. I mean, hey, you remember the chick with the mason jar, so.
The chick with the mason jar. Shocking. And it's not what you're thinking. It's absolutely not what you're thinking, folks. So anyway, let's wrap up. Obviously, there's a heed sign of caution, or rather a pause with some caution that, hey, look. we have found something that is interesting. We cannot jump to conclusions. However, we know that this is the way this presents on Earth, and it's presenting somewhere else. There could be a connection. So that is your extraordinary or your bizarre for for the week. And I'll link
not that. Expect to find life out there?
What's that?
Do you not expect to find life out there?
Well, it's not that I expect to find life. I think that we may find existence of life or past life in our solar system, potentially. I wouldn't be surprised if it's not in my lifetime. If I die and we don't find life in our solar system, I wouldn't be surprised. However, I think the chances are that if life is discovered outside of our solar system or outside of our atmosphere on Earth, I think that'll be that life that found us. Because I think we will only be able to see as far as we can see now. I don't know if that will change that much. And quite frankly, I know the technology will get better to be able to probe the different planets in our solar system. However, I don't expect to find, I would say, like meaningful life, the life that we see in alien movies and stuff like that.
It's kind of like, I know I'm the poor gentleman and his estate, please just write me an email and cuss me out for not remembering the name. And I'm sorry. But one of the gentlemen that followed up on the whole wow signal and all that, said that the biggest reason was, if you look back on human civilization, that every time we seem to be prepared, and this is going to shock a lot of people, I'm sure they're listening to this, but every time we appeared ready to advance beyond the precipice and do great things, we destroy ourselves. And let's see, the Neo-Babylonian Empire, the Roman Empire, the Dark Ages, the Crusades. I mean, need I continue? That was his whole point, that every time that any other civilization has been prepared to reach out to us, they destroyed themselves, as we seem to be want to do.
And it very well could be the case. Hopefully, all I know that if I believe that if life does find us, they will be, it will be something
somebody
far,
help them.
Far more advanced than what we are, and probably different technology. And who knows, you know?
Anyway, to your point,
I think it was Robert Oppenheimer who, when they dropped detonated the first nuclear bomb, it went off, and he said something like, "Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds."
Hey, look, I'm sorry to distract from the main topic, but
is the main topic? So that is your bizarre for the week. Potential life on Venus, maybe. All right, so let us dive in.
The real question is there life on Earth?
Now you're getting somewhere. Is there life on Earth?
Hey!
Okay, so where were we going? We were going with an interesting precast. I definitely want to touch on two things. So let's save the Nobel Prize debate for a minute, and let's just go ahead and talk about the polls. So you brought up some interesting stuff. Not going to name names. Not going to talk about. But that being said, we've got football opening back up. We've got life potentially, hopefully, at least from the president's eyes, returning to normal. Even though he's giving ridiculous press conferences with the touchy-touchy on the mask and sounding like a buffoon.
That was a ridiculous statement.
It was unbelievable. I was shocked. I was on break and I was watching. Really?
Were you really shocked?
Yes. Yes. I couldn't believe it. He looked like an idiot.
Based on everything you and I know, you were shocked?
I just couldn't believe how stupid it looked.
Because more often than not, the precedent, it's like the Big Lebowski. No, you're not wrong, Walter. You're just an asshole.
Yeah.
Pardon my French.
The thing is, the president continues to be wrong. The president continues to be wrong, and he continues to be an asshole. So,
but is he wrong?
They're not wrong about touching the mask.
You can't forever keep the economy shut down. Somebody's going to pay the bills.
Sure. Absolutely.
But do continue with
Where were we? Okay. So, talking about the polls, I think that, so I said that I wouldn't make any predictions about the upcoming debate itself on who's going to win. However, I think we can make some predictions. Let's say that Joe Biden has a pretty poor showing, which I think unfortunately is a potential. It's an absolute possibility that he has a poor showing. And if he has a poor showing, the thing is, just given the, given what all of America knows about the president, I'm just, what I'm unsure about is the amount of people that really are on the fence. Like when President Trump gave his town hall, that lady was talking about pre-existing conditions, whatever. She was upset. She was crying after, and she goes, "Well, now I'm gonna." Now I'm going to vote for Biden because he just really wouldn't answer my question. And so I stopped and I was like, how many people are actually at this point where we're like 45 days out?
Do you think she was undecided?
That's the thing.
I know what you're... I'm drinking what you're pouring.
Okay, so I'm like, are there really...
She already had her mind made up.
But she was still there. It's like, is that indicative? Is that representative? What's that?
That's not an insult.
No, I'm not saying it's an insult at all. I'm just, at this point, if Biden has a poor showing, does that mean that all of a sudden these people are like, well, you know, well, the president didn't answer my question. Biden had a poor showing. I guess I have to vote for Trump. Like, is this where we're at in America?
You know, here's where it matters.
Calm me down. Calm me down.
This cricket needs to calm down. Like, dear God. You can't hear that?
I can, but it's calming.
So, look, Pennsylvania was decided by less than 0.1% last go round. That's where that's going to matter, okay? Because there are folks going, okay, I really don't like the president's rhetoric. I really wish he would stay off Twitter. They're also going, okay, I like the Joe Biden of 2008 and prior. But I'm given pause by the fact that he must not be that. Now, follow me here.
Track.
This is logically true. He must not be that much of a centrist, or else Bernie Sanders and AOC and Elizabeth Warren wouldn't have endorsed him. Now, that is a factor, bar none, period. You may not like hearing that, but AOC doesn't endorse centrists. Name me another centrist she endorsed. I'll wait.
Okay. I hear you.
Go ahead. Go ahead. All right.
But,
go ahead.
But in...
Jesus.
Pick your paper up. All right. I get it. But to me, that is a testament to the lack of... And I hate to say intellect or understanding of why AOC would endorse a centrist. So who's the guy out there that's like, wait a second, AOC endorsed Biden? I thought Biden was center. She doesn't. He must be a radical socialist.
Like, you're placing too much emphasis on Biden. That's not what matters there. What matters is AOC.
Okay, so that she should have. You're just saying she should have.
That is the independent variable.
Gotcha. So it could be a mistake that an AOC or anyone in the squad endorses Joe Biden.
Biden accepting the endorsement.
Because it might not bring as many progressives to Biden as it will turn blue-collar Pennsylvanians to Trump.
No, again, that's the wrong side of the issue. The issue is shale fracking and natural gas has brought a whole ton of jobs to Western Pennsylvania specifically. Pittsburgh, I don't know if you know this or not, Pittsburgh is the only municipality above 1 million people in the United States that did not suffer through the Great Recession. They didn't have one. So when they hear we're against fracking, which I don't care what campaign ads they run at this point, that's the statement of Joe Biden. And also, Kamala Harris is against it as well. What the Pennsylvanians in West Pennsylvania are hearing is a bunch of BS. Okay? They're not buying it.
No, and the
I'm
same
thing that means they're going to go out in droves and vote for Trump.
Same with northern Minnesotans who are in the mining industry.
Look, I got it. But what I'm saying is it's missing the forest for the trees to say, well, so I'm just going to go out and vote for Biden because of AOC. No. That's missing it. Her showing up for Biden, I wouldn't have accepted her endorsement. I mean, you can't stop her from getting on social media if you're Joe Biden, but I would never have elicited that support. I wouldn't have. Bernie Sanders, fine, that's one thing. Bernie Sanders hasn't changed his positions in half a century.
I mean, he's the same one that's going to fight or would have fought for unionization of those frackers, you know, whether it give it a beat.
And that's fine, but you're going to honestly call an AOC, and look, nothing against her personally. You know this. I've defended her how many times on this podcast? Okay. She has a right to say what she wants to say. But that's not a good look to people in Pittsburgh and Oil City and Knox, Pennsylvania, the rest of Allegheny County, that they've done rather well from fracking. And they're not hearing that.
So is this...
Okay. Who do you think they blame the Big Ten not playing ball on?
Well, I mean, it's a pretty logical pick. If we're talking about, I mean, yeah, and I can see you can blame no football on the Democrats.
Well, who would you like to blame it on?
I mean, I would blame it on the fact that there's a pandemic. Blame it on COVID. I don't know. Like that's the logical intellectual step. Like it sucks.
Who are you going to blame that ideologically on?
We can't play football. Like boo-hoo. You know?
I know it means nothing to you.
Look, man, I love football. Like every other American male and females. I just realize that sometimes we have to sacrifice for the greater good. And if that means no football, keeps our kids safe.
Sure.
How about those guys that are looking for a potential run to the NFL and now they're forced to go out on the field?
How about the seniors at Michigan and Ohio State and Penn State that don't get to play ball because of restrictions that we won't place on mass social unrest gatherings? Now, whether you think I'm the one saying that or not, there's no getting around the duplicitous nature of, okay, so we agree with this mass protest and the intermingling less than 6 feet per person. I'm just deducing by looking at the videos. What?
So what I would ask the question.
Don't you because, play football?
Because I don't know. I don't know the numbers.
You don't know
I don't,
if there was social distancing at those rallies?
No. I'm gonna say something that might be controversial here.
I just said something that was controversial.
Well, I'm going to say something more controversial.
More?
Yep, I will.
Yes.
So, and I don't know. I don't know. If I was a senior playing ball and it was my last year, maybe I wasn't going to go to the NFL, you know, pretty
what
much by junior
year. It was your last chance to put
play
on.
Ball. Yeah, generally by junior year, I mean you're pretty much scouted. You'll go to the combine. Like these guys will go if they're gonna play ball, even if they miss senior year, they're gonna go to the combine if they truly are gonna play NFL ball. I would stop and say, if we're making a comparison between whether or not like how frustrated these guys would be because hey, we can't play ball because of COVID, yet look at those mass protesters. Who makes up a good chunk of college football offensive and defensive lines? African American men.
Not offensive lines.
All right. I don't really care what lines.
Lines be Caucasians.
I don't care what lines. But my guess is...
Well, you brought it up.
My guess is that, and I don't know, I could be wrong. Maybe they say, I don't care that people are out there fighting for equal equality of opportunity and justice. My guess is that, I don't know. I don't know, but I think, I don't know how many of them would be upset that they can't play ball, but that's going on. I could be wrong. Maybe every single one of them is like, man, if they're out there protesting for equal opportunity and criminal justice for Breonna Taylor and all those guys, but we can't play ball, I'm just pissed. But my guess is I think there's a realization of like what's happening culturally.
I think it's a bit of a manipulation of what I said.
I'm not calling you out. I'm just saying I'm just going to take it one step further and say that I think like as important as football is to the fabric of American society, I think it's downright stupid that you could go and say, well, you know what? President Trump, he really pushed for football. And those Democrats don't want football this year. Wow, I gotta vote for Trump. I promise you.
That's not exactly what I said.
That's what it sounds like. That's insane. That is a nearsighted, uninteresting, selfish individual that would swing their vote because of football. And look, let's pick something that Nate loves. Nate loves...
What do you love?
It's a good question. I love a lot of things.
You love Led Zeppelin, right?
What's that?
No? You don't love Led Zeppelin?
No. Like look it back here. Let's say that for whatever reason...
I see the guitars.
Yeah. Let's, for whatever reason, there was a guitar season. Right? I love playing these guitars. But you said, hey, look... Just for, you know, and this is pretend hypothetically, this was logical to a global pandemic and the death of 200,000 Americans. Like, hey, yo, could we just not do that for like, it's just going to be a little while. It's just going to be a little while. Like it's going to protect our students. It's going to protect these high level athletes. It sucks with the sacrifice we have to make. I would say, oh my God. Yeah. I think that's I probably can do without that for a little while.
That's mighty wide of you.
Yeah. So, I think I could handle that. That's something I love. It wouldn't be a big deal. It wouldn't swing a vote for me. I guess that's where I think it pains me in society today that, that football is what's moving the meter for some people.
No, that's the wrong metric, okay? Because, look, the irony is not lost on me that I finally move up within 2 hours of Happy Valley, and I can't go to a Penn State game. Look, look, it was like, of course I can. Okay, so that's not entirely the issue here. You want to know what the issue is? The almighty dollar.
For sure.
Okay, because those programs, no, most of them, most people don't know this, but all the money that it generates, you know, Alabama, the University of Alabama football team has been the most successful over the past, 15 years? And on aggregate, it profits about $1.5 million to $2 million. But the amount of revenue that it generates, dollars to go flowing through there, and the amount of non-football playing students that it draws in. I mean, there's something, for God's sake, the mob is Rome. Okay. Then you pair that with the issue of, well, people are kind of going crazy. They've got to return to work. We've got to open small businesses. And so, yeah, schools have got to open. Now, it may seem like I'm all over the place here.
No.
But you're drinking when I'm pouring, I'm sure.
It's all connected. Let them eat cake.
No,
I realize it's part of it. It's part of it. But ultimately, you're saying it's a restart of the economy in some cases, especially in these college towns and to these programs.
Who's paying for us to stay closed? This year alone, I'll send you the link. Okay, we can put it in the show notes. This year alone, we're running a $3 trillion deficit. Mm-hmm. The national debt, as of time of this publication, is $26.7 trillion.
Yeah. And
who's paying for the economy to stay closed, Nate?
And I will argue that right now, we have to do that.
What?
I will say we have to. If we want to continue to see the deaths of Americans, we're at 200,000 deaths probably tomorrow, depending on what the number is going to end tonight. And what's crazy is whoever's listening to this going, Nate, you're insane. Nate, you're insane that you would want to continue to try to. No, I know you're not, but there's someone else is. But there, it's not.
Here's what I'm getting at. Look, okay. I'm not saying I want Americans to die, Nate. What I'm getting at is when these mom and pops, that's 90%+ of our economy. It's not Microsoft. It's not Apple.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Pan Am. Well, they're not around anymore. But it's not the big corporations. It's the small businesses. Who's keeping them alive?
And that's where the money needs to go to. It needs to go to individual citizens, and it needs to go to the. I know it's not, but it could. It could.
And it's all McConnell's fault, right?
We could prop up. I'm not saying it's Mitch McConnell's fault for this go around. If what I'm saying is whatever we do next, whether it's $1 trillion or $3 trillion, that money, and there's a number of guys, I was going to actually look it up. Of course, they're rich dudes. In venture capital. Also echo the fact that we absolutely need to pay Americans right now, and we need to pay small business.
This is a slippery slope into UBI, and I'm not doing it.
No, it's not UBI. This is to get through this. It's protect the general welfare of the citizens of the United States, and it's a one-time thing, and we have a better plan for when this shit happens again.
It's not a one-time thing.
What's that?
We've already done it this past spring. It's not a one-time thing.
I know. I mean one-time thing, meaning this event a one-time event. This is a one-time event. Next time, we have a playbook and we have a plan. Right now, because pandemics will happen again, that's absolutely right, but we learn from this one.
The next time, we're actually going to acknowledge that it was China that lied to the WHO.
Next time, we acknowledge that we need to do whatever it takes to keep American business open. Not necessarily big corporations, but small mom and pop businesses, what are the backbone of really commerce in the United States, and keep Americans safe, pay them, keep those unemployment benefits going, and just for a moment, forget about austerity. Like, and I'm not, it sounds crazy, but this is,
when did
this
we
is
remember probably, austerity.
Hmm?
When did we remember austerity?
We haven't really. But right,
you can't say it with a straight face. You can't say that with a straight face.
I just did.
That all of a sudden, I know that's what's amazing to me, is that all of a sudden we're going to say, hey, look, we're going to have this playbook and take care of small business. Where was the foresight then?
No, look, I didn't write the plan last time, but it makes sense that.
Blame Mitch McConnell as though the Senate Republicans were at fault.
I'm not blaming Mitch McConnell. I'm not saying. I mean, it's sitting on his desk. Like, I think I suppose you could blame Democrats, or you could blame Republicans. Quite frankly, I lean to the side of the Democrats, because I think right now we should not give a shit about how much money it takes to keep Americans safe and to keep business afloat. If we can do it without, in a way, increasing the death toll in the United States. I just believe that we don't have to sacrifice lives to just restart this economy, to just say, as I said before, say fuck all and just drive on. I just think that it shows an utter, absolute lack of plan and lack of unity at the federal government level. I do believe that right now we should pay Americans, we should pay small business, and because if you pay you pay Americans, they're gonna pay their rent, they're gonna buy food, and they're gonna buy shit. I just look at what drives the GDP in the United States.
So no credit to the president whatsoever for his moratorium on evictions. None.
No, we didn't even talk about it. I think it's solid. I give the president credit for stepping up and doing something when the Democrats and the Republicans couldn't come to a consensus. Whether it's legal or not, I don't know. I'm not saying the fact that he wanted to create, was it, what, $300 in unemployment benefits and the state was going to pick up part of it? It was outside the box thinking, and I appreciate that. However, what I would have liked to seen is figuring out how to bring the Democrats and the Republicans to the table to hash out a negotiation. I'm not.
That's his fault, too.
So,
serious?
Huh?
You would have liked to see him get McConnell and Pelosi together. So that's his fault, too.
I didn't say it was his fault. I said it would have been good. It would be good to see. I think it'd be good for the country.
Let me tell you what would be good to see. After the UAE deal, to see Israel and Bahrain get together and Serbia and Kosovo get together. That'd be great to see.
We took a left turn at 45 minutes, but
no. Look. The reality is, let's get this straight. There's nothing that he could do to make anybody left or center give him credit. Nothing.
That's not true. If the president of the United States came out tomorrow and he said, let's split the difference.
I heart your feelings.
No, hold on.
That make you feel better?
If the president of the United States came out tomorrow and he's, I just told you, I gave him credit for stepping up when the Republicans and the Democrats couldn't come to a consensus. Now.
Which you didn't know if it was legal or not. So
I just,
the most
no, I just, I'm just saying, I don't know. I don't know if the president can actually authorize the unemployment benefits. It's not that I think he's doing something illegal and should be impeached for it. I give him credit for trying. But if the president came out tomorrow, the Republicans are stuck at $1 trillion. The Democrats are stuck at $3 trillion. And the president came out with a comprehensive plan to move forward at $2 trillion. Said, this is what I want to do. I'm going to get in there. We're going to get this figured out. I'm a deal maker. And he did it. I think that would do more to swing voters than getting football arranged in the Big Ten. I think that that's the kind of leadership that we have not seen with the president of the United States. And that's what he could do. He could step up, meet them in the middle, and get those two parties in the room and hash a fucking deal out. And that's not happening. And I'm not saying Joe Biden would do it, but that's where I would give the president credit. And it's not happening right now. That's my case.
I can't vouch for what you would give him credit for or not. I just think the silence left of center is deafening.
Maybe. But you know what? The president does it. The president does it to himself because he's a fucking asshole.
Okay.
Yep.
But if we, for a second, because look, don't get it twisted, the new folks to the show. I'm not President Trump's lawyer. And I've condemned him a number of times. Okay. But if, let me rephrase, because let's see, Kane, Romney, no. If any other president, though, came out with a deal between the UAE, Bahrain, and Serbia and Kosovo, all within the same month, dear God. Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize before he'd been president a year. And for what? I'm not real sure.
All right.
Bahrain, Israel, Serbia, Kosovo, within a month. No Nobel Peace Prize. Why? Because we don't like the man.
Okay. You know why? There's two reasons.
You're going to argue with that.
The original argument that we had was, does the current president of the United States...
Into a second episode, don't worry.
Okay, so... because we were going to talk about this. So, teaser for next episode, because we'll circle back to this. This will always be relevant.
Keep recording.
Okay, that's fine. So, now we'll
split the two. People will listen again, apparently.
Allegedly. But you know what? No, we just roll a little longer because I think this is good to talk about. So,
you're going to dispute that?
No. So, there's two things about, well, let me step back. The original conversation we had was President Obama did nothing except for literally be a civil servant and get elected president as the first minority or first African-American president. And he received the Nobel Prize. Meanwhile,
Nobel Peace Prize.
Meanwhile, President Trump, for the first time in many years, has finally got the UAE and Bahrain to acknowledge, essentially, the presence of Israel. And
that's the first time ever, not in years.
Ever. Well, in modern...
No. Those two Arab states have never officially recognized the state of Israel, Nate. Ever.
Well, that's what I mean. Since 1940, whenever.
Since before it wasn't a state.
Yeah. I will acknowledge the fact that it is a good step in that direction of that of that region. However, where it doesn't exactly, from a geopolitical perspective, where it isn't so...
From Paul Krugman?
What's that?
You getting texts from Paul Krugman right now?
No, I'm not. No
or
texts.
George Friedman, I no don't texts. Know.
Here's where I just don't... It doesn't excite me, right? If this had happened maybe...
well, I want you to be excited.
Okay. If this had happened back when this would excite me, okay? If back in the day when Iraq and Iran were basically at war with one another, the United States had created a destabilized region. If at that time a President Trump had gone in and got UAE and Bahrain to acknowledge the state of Israel, I would say, wow, holy shit. Because there would be no reason for them to do that. There would be that would take a monumental force to get them to acknowledge that. Now, the reason they did it, the reason that, and by the way, Bahrain and UAE, their citizens were not stoked that their leaders went and acknowledged Israel because they definitely align more with the Palestinians than they do the Israelis. So it wasn't as if their leaders and the whole of UAE and Bahrain citizens were like, oh yeah, let's acknowledge Israel. That's great.
Where did you get that poll from? The Atlantic?
No. It's just, I mean, I don't know where I got it. It's just sort of like...
No.
What's that?
That'd be good to know.
Where that came from?
Where that poll came from, because I'm pretty sure they're enamored with money.
So...
And you can guarantee the flow of money if... Let's see. Who are the primary backers?
So
America, England, and France.
I'll find it. But the real reason this doesn't shock me or it's super exciting is the fact that Iran is a danger to both Bahrain and UAE. Now, where do you go crawling to? You could go to the Saudis, or you could go to the U.S.-backed Israeli state and acknowledge.
What's your point? What's your point?
My point is, if it didn't take much for them to acknowledge Israel, given the fact that Iran is a threat in that region. So it wasn't like Trump went over there and brokered an amazing peace deal, that Jared Kushner was over there like really hitting the ground and really making the case for accepting the state of Israel. It's not. It's a logical step. It's a logical move. Iran, those small states need protection. What better place than is a U.S.-backed Israeli state?
It's the U.S., the U.K., and France. But do you think that it just occurred to them about the Shia severity-backed Iranian state?
Did
that
it
just now occur to them? I mean, you and I have talked about, we talked about in the locker room at Walter Reed. We've read about it from George Friedman. We've talked about it at length. We're well aware of the proxy wars.
Yeah, but there was still a pretty...
To the UAE? I mean, I trained with those men from the UAE. You think it just occurred to them in Bahrain that, you know, Iran's a nefarious actor in the Middle East?
But when we were in the locker room back at Walter Reed, there's a difference. There was a bigger U.S. presence in Iraq than there is today. And when Trump starts to threaten to pull out even more troops from Iraq and Afghanistan and sort of siphon down the presence in that area, they've got to go look for allies. They've got to go look for help. So
what you're saying is, because we lessen our presence there, they're going to seek us out for a deal.
Well, I don't know if they're seeking us out for a deal, but they certainly are starting to look for the chess piece to move. Where do we go next? What can we do to have some protection in this region from a growing threat that is Iran? And that is go to the U.S.-backed Saudi Israeli state and take the first step, because they can't just go outright and make some deals and do all this stuff, because they've got a population that's like, eh, you know what? We're not so sure about this. They've got to do it in baby steps. And the first thing that they do is they acknowledge the fact that Israel is a state. And you might just see the dominoes fall in the Middle East by acknowledging Israeli. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I'm not saying that any sort of semblance of peace in that region is good or is bad. I think it's great. I'm just not subscribing. Like, my expectation and bar for a Nobel Peace Prize is pretty high. And I think, let me look back. How many Nobel Peace Prizes have been given for peace in the Middle East? 4. So we're going to add this another just like a gimme Nobel Peace Prize. Like, to me, it just, if I had it my way, we would just cease fire on the whole Nobel Peace Prize for a little bit until something truly Nobel worthy of a prize.
So, surfaces. Vis-a-vis, you don't think that Trump deserves it over Obama?
You know,
first year of his presidency, Nate, be real, be a real ninja now. First year of his presidency versus the last month of Trump foreign policy.
Yeah.
Keep a straight face and answer that.
Yeah. I haven't thought about whether or not I think. So what you're asking me is, because Obama got one, Trump should get one.
That's not what I said.
You're saying,
what I said was, I'm asking you to compare the two.
Absolutely.
Obama hadn't been president for a year, and frankly, hadn't done shit in terms of foreign policy. Other than, I mean, as he did throughout his presidency, expanded the war in Afghanistan so much so that in foreign policy circles where, you know, you're honest, it became known as Obama's war.
Sure.
The war in Afghanistan. First year, hadn't done anything in terms of foreign policy other than pick out names in the kill room, versus what's happened in the last month of Trump's presidency.
Yeah.
I mean, you're also ignoring Serbia, Kosovo. I guess they could have gone to Mars Colony Music. They could have gone to Paris. They could have gone to Milan. Instead, Serbia and Kosovo came to, what's it called? The White House to sign a peace accord.
I could.
You're going to tell me he doesn't deserve it?
I will acknowledge. I mean, I guess the fact that he's cozier with dictators and creates more of a rift with our allies sort of negates all of that.
The question I asked you.
I know. So I'm going back to that. So your question is, what does Obama really deserve one over Trump? And I will say, in terms of...
I'm asking you, okay, Obama won one, period. Yeah. There's no going back, unfortunately, redoing that. He didn't deserve it, but that's not really the topic, because he got it, okay?
Sure.
Penn State deserved to play for the national title in 94, going 12-0, but they didn't get the chance, because there wasn't a BCS playoff. Bottom line is, they didn't get a chance. It's over. Obama won. So what I'm saying is, versus that, first year of your presidency, zero foreign policy accomplishments. Do you not think the last month of Trump's presidency in terms of foreign policy, Israel, UAE, Israel, Bahrain, Serbia, Kosovo, you don't think that's worthy of a... Because you don't like the man?
No, it isn't... I acknowledge that there was work done to get to the point we're at, especially with Kosovo, Serbia, with UAE and Bahrain and Israel. I acknowledge that. Was it, in terms of foreign policy, certainly more than Obama had done within 1 year of office? Absolutely. But that it what I can't do with, in terms of my bar for what a Nobel Peace Prize in the character of the individual themselves, which I should say factors into it, I can't sit here and say whether one is more deserving than the other. I just don't. I know that Obama certainly was a symbol for hope and change. He was breaking the ceiling for African-American men and women in the United States, and quite broadly the world, maybe the next greatest symbol of sort of hope and the ability to break ceilings in Nelson Mandela in 1993 and 1994. Did he do something tangible in terms of foreign policy? I don't, at that point, no. But who he was and what he stood for and the hope that he gave people, I think they had to write it up in a way that was sort of a unity statement for the entire world, was enough to get him a Nobel Peace Prize. Now, I think maybe some of the people that gave him that prize watched his foreign policy play out over the next 8 years and were like, ugh, I don't know if that was like the right move up front. but maybe it was that their bar was set a little higher by the fact that they gave Obama a Nobel Peace Prize so quickly into his presidency. I don't know. This is all speculation.
It is speculation, but let me shock some of our audience here, because I'm sure they're thinking at this point that I'm some big Trumpican, but it was just catching on. No, I'm a centrist who wants a balanced budget, that wants us out of foreign wars, that is also outside of abortion, a social liberal. But why I think that Obama got the award is because of the outrageous snobbery of our European overlords, who, you know, in their great magnanimous wisdom, finally decided to acknowledge America for electing a minority, which, hey, I'm great. Ellen for president. Rosie O'Donnell for president. I don't give a flying expletive deleted what group you're from. Fine.
You're saying
great. But I think it's very obnoxious to me for a group of people. Let's see what the Volkenschwachen, Deutschland, to ignore. Oh wait, what was it? Oh wait, yeah, it was y'all less than a century ago that were putting people in camps and turning the world into turmoil. You now have the temerity to dictate to Americans civil rights and duty? Seriously, get out of here. It's really nervy. I mean, do I exaggerate?
No. And look, I see where you're coming from. In the
that's
spirit,
not anti-Obama. That's not anti-democratic party.
No, it's all in the spirit of debate and.
Oh, I know you're ready to end this one.
Really?
I know you are.
Why is that?
I mean, A, we're you know, the whole it's going to turn into a pumpkin at midnight. But seriously, tell me I'm wrong that that's not snobbery on the part of Europe.
Look, was
they've got the
I will acknowledge the for what other than this the fact that the which I think is a feat in itself and something that needs to be recognized in the United States, that Obama was the first African American president of the United States. And that right. is at least something. And we can all acknowledge that.
I'm
now,
all about that, man. I spent that night at the Hi Hat 2000 in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, 12 miles from where Brett Favre was from. And I was the only cracker in the place. Okay? I had a great night. It was historic. Yeah.
What I will acknowledge is that
you're not
going to
acknowledge that, are you?
No. What I will acknowledge is that he didn't, in terms of what the Nobel Prize is.
What is it? That's my point.
Exactly. What is it? And I think there's I will acknowledge that there wasn't as much done by Obama to get that Nobel Prize than
I guess
other...
my point is, based on the snobbery of where it's coming from.
And it is. It is bureaucratic. It is whatever you want to call it. And I think that's where they're really...
I think it's worthless, is my point. I mean, think about it. The people that won't acknowledge 1939 through 1945 had the temerity to dictate civil liberties to us.
You know, I believe that a Nobel Prize is warranted for someone that comes up with a new economic theory or a new mathematic theory that can give us a greater enlightenment into our existence on planet Earth or our relationship with one another and the cosmos and time. Like that is truly noble and is deserving of an accolade and a prize. I don't know about all the other stuff. I really don't. And that's kind of where I stand with both of these Nobel Prizes. Is again, I'm never going to win one. I don't know that I will ever.
You know, I'm not going to win one.
Shit, you're not. That's for sure. We can agree on that.
Let's be real.
200, 300 hours worth of audio. There's no way either one of us is winning a Nobel Prize.
You realize the deep fakes?
Yeah. I think you only need like 30 minutes audio or some shit. Like not a lot at all. But thank goodness I have every single one of these files I still have. So if there was some obnoxious garbage that was thrown out.
Did you upgrade to unlimited bandwidth, by the way?
I think so.
I saw that on there. I was like, holy.
We're shit. Good. We're good. If anyone.
I know all of them too. I mean, it's funny. I send a portion of this to people and they're like, man, two guys hate each other. I'm like, no, we are just able to. We're just able to talk.
And damn, that's a. Seems to be a tough thing to do these days. So, well, look, we are at about an hour and 6 minutes, hours and 7 minutes.
God.
I drank this entire thing. I need to go to the bathroom.
What is that, by the way?
It's just water.
Are you sure?
If it was anything other than water, I would be slurring my words and throwing up right now, my friend. And I am not an alcoholic, really? So.
Man.
Yeah, look at that.
Indeed. Oh, man, that's awesome.
It is water.
We gotta reconvene before the end of the year. I'll have to, you know, well, I say that. I was supposed to be out there in June, but the Rona kind of threw us off. But, man, at some point, we're going to get you and Sarah down for a Saints game. You know, we'll have to reconvene. I mean, so many things the Rona's thrown off. But, I mean, man, you know, I enjoy this. I love you.
Absolutely. I love you, too. And as always, to our listeners out there, thank you for tuning in. You can find this episode on YouTube, and the link will be in the show notes if you feel like it would enhance your listening experience to also look at both of us during this episode. You head over, subscribe, please, and it will just further our reach. As always, keep the comments coming, especially at Podomatic, and as always, send your comments, concerns, and praises, hopefully, over to ModState. At modstate.com. That's ModState at modstate.com. As always, my friend, it's an honor and a privilege to do this with you week in and week out. So until next time.
Au revoir.
We'll see you.